The first time she heard the sound, she just thought it was her imagination. But on the second and the third, she knew it was real, because the sound moved across the attic floor, resonating through the roof to her room below. Nikki realized that what she was hearing were footsteps. Her first thought was that her father had come home without her noticing and was up there searching for something. But before the thought had run its course, she knew her father wouldn't have come home and not greet her. She put her book down and carefully got out of bed, trying not to make a sound. She was holding her breath. Why was her heartbeat so loud? She tiptoed to her door and silently opened it, only to see a dark hallway. Why hadn't she turned on the lights? The moon was full and shed its light on narrow strips from the window at the end of the hall. Nikki listened. She could hear the attic door slowly being pushed open and weight being put on the uppermost step of the stairs. Panic erupted in her stomach and at the same time paralyzed her legs, and the order to move was not obeyed. Her heart wanted to break through her chest as she heard someone or something coming down the stairs. Just a couple of more steps and she would be able to see what that something was. Hello again, and welcome back to the Guild Podcast, the podcast for the Writers, Artists, and Readers Guild. I am your host, Chris Mary Haltman, and today's guest is another Scandinavian. As some of you might know, that I am stationed in Scandinavia, in Sweden, and this author comes from our neighboring country, or the neighboring country to me, Finland. Thomas K.S. Wake. And we talk a little bit. I'm very interested in Finnish mythology, which I think in a lot of ways is very different from the Scandinavian mythology. And we talk a lot about that. And we talk about being a lonely genre fiction writer in a country that doesn't quite accept genre fiction. But it's an interesting talk, and I think you will enjoy it immensely. So without further ado, here is Thomas K.S. Wake. At this time, I would like to say welcome to author Thomas Wake, or Thomas K.S. Wake, as it is. And I just understood that the K.S. is your real name.
Correct.
Yes. Welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm fine, thank you. Very fine. Just started my furlough from my regular day job, so I'm just hanging around with the wife and the child. So.
Oh, so are you? Is it like a regular furlough, or is it something that is just like recent because of Corona, or is it
because of Corona? We go in cycles at my workplace, so now it's my turn to lay low.
Okay, and your wife is home, I guess, then with the child, or?
Yeah, on a maternity leave still. She's only 8 months. My child, not my wife.
Good. It's good clarification for everyone.
Just in case.
Yes, you have the honor to be the first. Scandinavian on the show.
Oh.
So congratulations, I guess, are in order.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. It's a privilege, for sure.
Before we even get into like the whole thing of writing process and stuff like that, I do have some questions. I'm an American living in Scandinavia. My dad's Swedish, so I mean I have the Swedish heritage, and you're Finnish, so we're basically neighbors.
Yes.
And I was just, the one thing that I wanted to talk to you about, first of all, because I know what the climate is like here in Sweden when it comes to genre fiction, as people usually, although there's like a literary elite, and they've always looked down on genre fiction, be it horror or fantasy, especially fantasy literature, I would say, and probably even romance in a way. What is the climate like in Finland when it comes to genre fiction? What do people think of that?
Well, I think it's pretty much the same. Like horror is also horror, and fantasy is always a little bit looked down upon here. We have like at the moment we have like maybe one horror writer, Marko Hautala, who puts out a book once a year. Good books. He's a really nice, really good author. But other than that, there's not much horror books, not much fantasy books. Horror films are practically non-existent, and there's a reason that dates back to 40s and 50s with our tax system, which was pretty messed up. But yeah, there's a very little market for that. We have like very small, maybe some independent indie publishers, but they don't get much visibility, and pretty much none of the major publishers accept horror,
No.
except one, Tammi, which publishes, for instance, is Marko Hautala.
Okay. So, yeah, because I mean, here in Sweden, obviously, you have Jan Ajvide Lindqvist, who wrote Let the
Oh
Right One
yes.
In. So he's, I think, the only real Swedish horror writer of note, and then there are a couple of other ones. There's Andreas Roman, who writes both horror and fantasy, but there are no Swedish fantasy authors that have made any kind of waves anywhere in the world, in Europe or anything. Obviously, crime fiction is much bigger here in
Yes.
Sweden, and I'm sure it's the same in Finland.
Absolutely same. We have this brooding drunken detective literature. Like they sell in drones. They're very, very popular.
And I mean, Finnish authors in general seem to be quite scarce internationally. Am I wrong in thinking that or assuming that?
No, I don't think you are. Like it's there aren't many that are translated to other languages. That's very true. We have like maybe Kalle Päätalo, who wrote like this farmer romantic, not romantic, but like this rustic novels about the Finnish working man, and they are very well known worldwide, I think. And also again, this Marko Hautala that I mentioned, he had some of his horror novels translated in English. But other than that, like I also think that they don't spread much outside our tiny borders. I don't know why, because even the good ones are real. Oh, Mika Waltari, of course, but he's dead. But he was awesome. His books are amazing.
And I was actually going to just mention Mika Waltari actually, because he I mean, we were. I was talking to my workmate is from Finland, and we were talking in preparation for this interview about what we were going to talk about. And he we the I mean, Finland has a rich tradition. I mean, you have. I mean, not only Väinö-Linna, but there's also. I mean, Mika Waltari, who wrote historical fiction, but is also very. It's very fantastic.
Yeah.
My father-in-law loves Mika Waltari. He collects Waltari books, and he's American, and he absolutely loves it. So now I'm looking for some Finnish copies of Mika Waltari, so he can have them in the original language.
Oh, that's cool. I have some, but I can't give them away
No,
unfortunately.
I imagine. And we were also talking about the H.P. Lovecraft had a contact with a man named Petaja, I think. I'm not exactly sure if I am pronouncing that correctly, but
Probably Petaja, but yeah.
he was a Finnish. He was a weird tales or weird literature fan, but he also wrote his own. And they were talking about I guess there's this book on Gothic horror called The Haunted Castle. I don't know if you know of it. It was written by
No.
a Finnish, I don't know, literary scholar, I'm guessing. And Lovecraft said that if you need to read a book about the history of supernatural horror and fiction, the Haunted Castle should be your first book to read.
Oh, no, I feel ashamed that I don't know that.
Yeah, and I mean, I just basically, and I've been looking for them. There are a couple of reprints of it, but I think it's probably fairly out of print because I'm thinking it's from like maybe the 20s, 1920s.
Oh, I definitely have to put my looking glasses on
Yeah.
to find that.
And I mean, so do you feel? as an indie Finnish author, do you feel very lonely?
No, we're Finnish. We are lonely people. We despise other humans. You should know that if you're lived in Sweden. But
oh, I thought you only despised Swedes.
Yeah, by Swedes. Yeah. No, I kid. I kid. No, I don't feel like that at all. Because, well, like you know, I write in English. So, and all my contacts that I have, like in the social media stuff, they're English. So I have a lot of peer support and peer reviews, and we read each other's work. So. No, not in that sense, but maybe in Finland, yes. I've tried a couple of times to get my stuff published, but it's always got rejected for different reasons. They don't, of course, never give individual feedback. It's just not for our publication schedule at the moment. So, but no, not in that sense. I don't feel, and I always try to slip some Finnish, something Finnish into my stories, like not the best known, but that has done the best around the world is the one that's in the It Calls from the Forest.
Yeah.
The short story, Seita. And Seita is a very Finnish concept about the shamans and the sacred stone. Like it's a Finnish Stonehenge, basically.
Oh, okay.
So I tried to put a little bit Finnish everywhere. I just wrote one story that was accepted by Suicide House Publishings, which is based on an old Finnish folktale on how to transport your dead from the place where they died to the churchyard in order the devil not to get them. So like, even though I write in English, I don't feel lonely in Finland, but I always try to put a little bit of my nationality in there.
And that's an interesting story too. And that was also something that I was discussing with my colleague, because obviously the countries in Scandinavia that have a similar history and language, Sweden, Norway, Denmark, and Iceland have very much like a similar. There's a similarity in folk tales and in mythology, which I mean is natural that a lot of authors base it off of that, the Norse mythology, as it's called. And so, what does Finland have? What is a typical Finnish folklore, folk tales that you can draw off of? I mean, is there, did the ancient Finns also believe in Thor and Odin, or do you have a different set of mythology?
Well, we have the same shit, different names, so to speak.
Okay.
So, like, we also had our Odin was called Ukko, which translates the old man. He's like the over god. And we also had our gods of thunder, and we have a lot of nature-based gods and mythologies, like a lot to do with lakes, a lot to do with forests. And then we have a lot of things about the devil.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think some of them, of course, is like a Christian devil, but then the devil just as like this personification of evil. Those we have quite a lot.
Okay.
But we have a lot that focuses around forest and animals, which I personally really love. Like, of course, if you know Kalevala, it's like Väinämöinen, the old wizard. He uses everything from nature, from the fish bones to bears to winds to swamps to dismantle his opponents. So we're like very nature-based shamanistic mythology we have. And I love that everything, in a way, it's like, I know people often joke about Finnish mentality. My wife, she's in Kazakhstan, and she often says that, can you please for once be less of a Finn and talk to people?
Okay.
But like, I think it's nice that we have this very, in a way, downplayed way of doing mythological things, that our biggest gods, they're good at throwing spears, and that's it. So that like, we don't have so much that like that Ukko came from heavens and split the earth and stuff like that. Like, for instance, Indians have a lot of those grander, epic god tales.
Yeah.
Our god tales are closer to earth and closer to nature. Well, literally closer to earth.
Are there authors that spin off of this type of mythology? Because I mean, I'd be ashamed I feel a little ashamed that I don't know these things, being that I'm work as a history teacher
B, also work as a Swedish teacher, and C, work as a religion teacher. So I'm ashamed that I don't know of this Finnish mythology. And even my colleague who is Finnish, he didn't know of them either. So, I mean, are there authors that tap into this stuff?
Well, yeah. Well, again, Marko Hautala, he has... He writes very, like, this Finnish horror. Like, the latest one that I read from him, there was this ancient temple that was hidden under this boggy swamp. Mm. And it was just, like, this Finnish strange mushroom entity that lived there and replicated people and took their lives. A little bit like Invasion of the Body Snatchers and stuff like that. But that, and then there's this one book, Ken Yötä ei pelkää, who doesn't fear the night. And I forgot her name, who wrote it. But it draws a lot on Finnish beliefs and old beliefs and traditions about this forest people who live under the hills, like Hiisi, kind of like an ogre or troll.
Mm-hmm.
So, but not that many. Like I said, most of our stuff is published, like, outside horror is historic detective stories or war books.
Mm.
For some reason, many Finnish authors, they're freaking upset with the Winter War.
I'm not surprised. I'm sure Swedes would be if they'd been in a war since Napoleon.
Yeah, but it gets a little tedious when you're like, when it comes Christmas... 12 books out of 10 is about the Winter War.
Oh, okay.
And then there's something else. But, and I do understand it, that it's like a kind of like a proud national moment that we won that war, but still it's a little bit beaten to death, in my opinion.
Yeah, I can understand. And then, in that way, I mean, I can understand why an author would want to distance themselves from the norm, because I can feel that as a writer myself here in Sweden, where it's just like you get so tired of detective stories, the same stuff, and Sweden does, as I said, doesn't even have a war to fall back on, so it's all like 10 out of 10 books at Christmas are all very different detective stories.
Yeah, but we do love Swedish detective stories here in Finland, I have to be like. And one of my favorite authors is Swedish. He doesn't write a detective tale. Jan Guillou, how do you say his name?
Guillou,
who wrote Hunskan and a lot of, like, I love his book. I've seen his interviews, and he seems like a complete prick.
He is.
But I love his books. Like, and he has the Hamilton series. Yeah. I love him. And, like, yeah. And also what you said about Lindqvist. Yeah. I loved Harbor. I think it's way superior than Let the Right One In.
Yes, and I think the one, I don't know if it was ever translated into to English. It's like his zombie book.
Yes, How to Handle the Dead.
Yes.
It was translated in English, and I've read it in English and Finnish.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I would know. And it's funny because that's, it takes place like where I grew up as a kid. And Lindqvist is roughly the same age as I am. I think maybe a little bit older. So, I mean, it's very familiar, both the time and when it takes place and the old haunts of my youth. So that's always fun.
It was funny about the, well, not funny, but interesting about the How to Handle the Dead, because I don't like zombie stuff at all.
No.
Like, very, very rare zombie films or books. I have maybe read three. And if I hadn't read Harbor first, I would have never picked up How to Handle the Dead.
Okay.
Because I really loved The Harbor, and I thought, well, it can't be that bad. And it was also actually a stellar book. It was very, very different from any zombie book, I think.
So if we were to go back and talk about your writing, now we've touched on a bunch of things that I think would probably set up for Thomas Wake, the writer, inspiration. So where do you find your inspiration? Is it in the dark woods of Finland? Is it Jan Guillou? Is it Mika Waltari? Where did you start writing, and where does it all come from?
That is a very good question, and we were just talking about this with another Finnish author who is trying to. He found me through Thomas Wake, and like he lives in Helsinki, I think, and he has one short story published, and we started kind of like this, peer duo.
Yeah,
like we read each other's stuff and that, and we were talking about inspirations, and the way like what in general happened with horror with me, I was. 5 or 6, I think, and my sister's friend was obsessed with horror, and my sister's friend left a VHS tape at my home that had a Reanimator and Evil Dead 2 on it. And as maybe a 6-year-old, I watched them, and I absolutely fell in love with Reanimator. Like, it wasn't scary. It was like nothing I had ever seen before, of course, as a child. And then I wanted to, then I realized later that it was based on a book. And then I searched out H.P. Lovecraft and started reading him. And that kind of got me into horror. And I was horror obsessed when I was a teenager and a child, to the point that my father was actually worried that there's something wrong with me. And I lived in this, I lived in this really, really tiny village in Finland. We had a 10,000 population there. My grandfather was a farmer and my father is a truck driver, so very like this rough, manly work. Mm. And it's a tradition in Finland that when a boy turns 15, they get a motorcycle. And I didn't want a motorcycle, I wanted a typewriter.
Okay.
And like, I've been basically writing always, and I never thought, and horror and dark fantasy, and then what I call this fireball fantasy, like Dragonlance, they were always very close to my heart when I was a kid. So I, of course, emulated those, and it was like a long time that I didn't even think about that I could ever make money or something out of it. Not up until recently. So like my influences come from pretty much like, and then Lovecraft, he introduced me to Robert Bloch, Algernon Blackwood, Robert E. Howard. I love this old Edgar Allan Poe. I love this old Gothic tales and these weird and Robert Belknap. Oh, Hound of Tindalos is one of my favorite short stories ever. So like those always like kind of stuck in my head. I've always liked more like this moody horror, opposed to like bloody violent horror, which is also very fun and entertaining. I love it. So like that got stuck into my mind when I was a kid. And like nowadays, when if I think about story, lots of it comes from music. I listen to music a lot, instrumental music, and of course music with lyrics naturally. And they like invoke images in me. And then we live in a very, very beautiful place outside. When I go to a backyard patio, there's like 70 meters of thick forest, and it opens to a lake.
Oh, yeah.
So like that actually is becoming a little, maybe a novelette. Or even a novel, this house that we're living in. But yeah, that is also, and then because I read a lot of stuff, I get inspired by other people's stories. And mythology is also very, very close to me. It's hard to like pinpoint where you get. Sometimes I do these exercises where I take two things that I love and see if something comes from it. One thing that I was listening to Septic Flesh, they had this song called Mad Architect. That is a Greek black metal band.
Okay.
And then I love the Rime of the Ancient Mariner by Samuel Taylor Coleridge.
Yeah.
This epic poem. And they fused into my head, and it became a story that hasn't been published anywhere. It's not finished yet. But I get these like connections. They just spark an image or a phrase or some kind of mental association, and then they just start growing to stories, some shorter, some longer. And that was a long, rambling answer to your very simple question.
It's okay. No, it's interesting. I mean, it seems like whenever I interview people, that whatever, and I do interview mostly horror people, not always by choice, it's just because it seems like the circles that I run in, especially like on Facebook, is mostly various horror groups.
Yes, I can relate.
but it's interesting because it seems like, as you talk about Reanimator and the Evil Dead, it seems like that first contact that you have with one genre is what kind of shapes you as a genre writer. I mean, I was introduced, I mean, my first introduction to like the movies or the general, genre fiction was, Star Wars and Willow and Indiana Jones more than it was horror, because my mom sheltered us very much from horror. She didn't care for horror herself. So it wasn't until I was a lot older that I think The Exorcist was probably the first horror movie that I saw. And so I was shaped very early by the whole, by fantasy and adventure. And I think I still have a soft spot for like H. Rider Haggard and stuff like that. But I was introduced also to Lovecraft very early on when reading, but I didn't see it as much. I mean, I like the mood that Lovecraft does, and just like you, I don't lean as much towards splatterpunk. I am more of a gothic weird tales kind of guy, and I like to emulate that style, but that doesn't always go over. I've realized when you send stuff into anthologies. Even though people love Lovecraft, they find that when other people write in Lovecraft style, it's a bit too archaic. So that kind of weirds me out, because people say like, "Oh, I love Lovecraft," and you send them something Lovecraftian, just like, "Yeah, no, but that didn't really fit." It's like,
But it's to like to be fair, Lovecraft is actually quite hard to emulate. Like, because first of all, I love his stories, but I'm not a huge fan of his writing.
Oh, okay.
So, but I have read everything that he has ever written. Like, literally, I read the 5-volume correspondence with other authors that he did. And I've read his, I found this not like original or anything, like his story journal, where he scribbled down his story ideas, this Dreamer's Diary, I think it's called. So, like, I'm fascinated by the world he creates, and some of his stories are really good, like the case of Charles Dexter Ward. I think it's brilliant, brilliant story.
He didn't think so.
Which is weird, but like his writing style is quite heavy. And Horror of Red Hook, that's a really good one too, also.
That's not it. It's interesting because now you chose two stories. One that Lovecraft himself derided very much and didn't find. Of course, he was always his worst critic, but I think we can all relate to that. But the Horror at Red Hook, which is also kind of seen as one of his poorer attempts at writing, even. But it was interesting because I mean, I love I those stories that I love by Lovecraft as well, like the facts in the case of Arthur German is also one that people usually kind of hate, especially those who are Lovecraft scholars, that they say like, "Oh, no, that's no good." But I completely love the setting of that story.
But it's the like, and of course, like Call of Cthulhu, it's just like the impact it had, you have to appreciate it and like admire it. But I think he was an awesome world builder, and he was somewhere between mediocre and good writer. So, but like I didn't, did I tell you? Maybe no, but I wrote my thesis on Lovecraft,
No,
and
you
like,
didn't say that.
so like it's like he has a huge influence on me. But he's not like on a pedestal that he's infallible, like old god or something like
No,
that.
no. Have you read anything by, because you were mentioning Block and Long, have you read anything by Seabury Quinn or those guys that he I think Loveman and stuff like that, a lot of people that he corresponded with. Have you ever read
No,
any of that stuff?
Quinn I'm unfamiliar with, no.
No.
But Robert Chambers, I absolutely adore the Pink and Yellow, the short story collection. It's really good. But he was his contemporary writer, and they corresponded a lot.
If you ever, I don't know if you have, but if you get a chance, so the H.P. Lovecraft Historical Society puts out a podcast every Monday called Voluminous, where they read and discuss one of Lovecraft's letters.
Oh, interesting. No, I didn't know that. I do, of course, know the Historical Society, but like, no, I have to check it out.
Check it out. It's pretty cool, and it's nice. And they actually have, because they have contact with a bunch of different publishers that have different collections, not only the Arkham House collection of his letters, this five-volume set, but also other, there are other publishers that have other letters that they've put up.
So maybe I have to retract that I read everything.
Well, no, you don't have to do that, but it could be that that those letters are all collected. I don't know. But so you've been writing for a long time, and when did you first get, when you realized, you were talking about realizing that you could make a living off of it, or you could at least publish things. When did you start submitting for publication?
About making a living, I made my living as a playwright for about 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And of course I tried to like sell horror, but it didn't work. And like the process of thinking about stories, creating, and then putting them down on paper and getting them out, it's amazing. I really love it. And then on a literary sense, I didn't send out submissions to publishers for a long time. Because first of all, I tried in Finnish, and they all got rejected. And then I couldn't, I maybe a little bit like gave up or something. And then there was also this part in my life that after I quit, not quit, but when I decided to do other things than the playwright, I started my own company. And then there was a production company. And then there was like time to write because you had to do all this boring bureaucracy stuff. But then now, then I just, I got fed up with the company and I quit the company. And then I went to the unemployment office and said that now I want some work where I really don't have to think.
Okay.
So that if I can lift heavy things, that will make me happy. And this is a long segue, but I will get to the point.
Okay.
So then I worked as a mover, furniture mover for like 6 months. And then my friend suggested that he worked at the airport, that the airport is looking for summer workers. Would you be interested? And I was like, okay, I am. And I live 170 kilometers from the airport. And I thought that, okay, this is just a summer job. So I will commute this one summer and that's it. And the commute were like long and boring. So first I read and then I thought that maybe I should do something productive with my life. And I started writing on those journeys.
Mm-hmm.
So it took me like 4 hours to commute every day. I started writing. And some of these things are actually quite good. And then I started only then, like a little over a year ago, I started thinking that maybe I could write and publish in English. Because my English is relatively good. But of course, there's always like this threshold of trying to get to the market with native speakers. And then I got like acceptance, actually three first acceptance in a month in January, I think. And it kind of gave me this huge confidence boost. And then I just started like fine tuning and honing my stories that I already have. I literally have dozens of stories that are like ready-ish. So I started to hone them and send them in, and I noticed, whoa, they are getting accepted too. And like people are liking maybe them, I don't know. So yeah, I already forgot your initial question, but like that's how I got into like publishing. I've only been publishing for this year basically.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, because I was wondering about that. That was my follow-up question. How long have you actually been published? Because I looked at your author page on Amazon and there aren't a lot of books there, but maybe also you are haven't been in the process of adding, because that's, you know, something that you kind of have to do yourself if nobody does it for you.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like, I think there might be 5 or 6 missing because I just checked it myself today. So like there's 3, I think, at the moment there on my writer's page. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go on.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, and of course, I mean, I know you from Eerie Rivers, It Calls from the Forest, and I believe Forgotten Ones, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I got 2 drabbles there.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, obviously, I mean, and I, my first, re, I mean, my first acceptance or my first book that I came out as part of was Forgotten Ones. Even though I had been accepted by a different publisher for another story earlier, that book didn't come out until July. So, I mean, my first taste was with Erie River, and that was kind of cool. Was that your first taste as well?
No, I had one before Erie River. It was this Sotera Press. They do these anthologies that one anthology goes with every state in the United States. And I submitted their Horror USA Texas, the Texas story. And that was my first. But I think also Forgotten Ones came out before that. The acceptance was before the Forgotten Ones came out. But yeah.
Yeah, because I
But here
think.
they have been amazing at Erie. I really, really like love those people there.
Do you
And the
have,
community is really nice there.
yeah, do you have more stuff coming out with Erie River?
I have now two waiting for the It Calls from the Sea. I did submit to the It Calls from the Sky, but they rejected them. So they're no, not there. But yeah,
No.
I have some stuff coming with the Suicide Sirens, the scary snippet stories, and those at least two is coming out. And I did, and just last week, the Black Hair Press released the Age Ancients collection. There is one of my stories that came out last week or week before that. But at least two at the moment is coming up.
So, and you were talking about the Erie River community. Do you keep up with a lot of the authors there? Do you have a lot of conversations, discussions, and such things? Because I know you and I are now going to be involved in a hush hush project that we obviously cannot discuss any further. We just make people excited.
You're gonna get gassed. Be quiet.
And then I think that's actually the first time I've actually seen you interact. But I mean, are you involved with the community otherwise?
Well, yeah, I do. Well, it's like maybe per my Finnish nature that I'm quite a chatterbox in real life, but like social media, and I'm also relatively old, so all this Facebook and this is young people stuff. So,
You're 1 year younger than I am.
Nonne, I apologize for calling you old.
Yeah, you just called me ancient.
But yeah, I'm because like social media to me, it's like I've never been very comfortable in it. But I do like on the there's on the Erie River authors group. There I talk a little bit, and then like it's just like I like live conversations more, which is weird. Social media is always a little bit awkward in many ways, but I try to contribute a little bit. I'm in few groups. We talk about horror, but unfortunately, often sinks into something else, and I don't like that. Like there was this, I'm not gonna name any group names, but there was this like one group that I joined, and it was like really awesome at first, and then now basically people just talk about politics and argue with each other about things like grammar. So there's not actually like, and I'm not even unfortunately joking, and it's like it just sucks the fun out of it. And
It's
so that's
basic.
also why I tend to stay away a little bit. But there's like I said, the Erie River community is different, and then this project that we are involved in together, it's also different because people have the same interest and goal. There's no need to like talk about other stuff at the
No.
moment. It's just like,
It sounds like every single Swedish Facebook group that I've ever been part of. It's just like they people, and especially because I live in a small town, so there's all these like, buy and sell groups and stuff like that. And it all devolves into politics and sadly, racism.
oh.
So everything becomes a racial issue. And because I live in a small community here, there's a lot of racism. And I think Lovecraft would have liked it here. Or at least on in those Facebook groups.
I'm sure like one of his like better qualities was his flaming racism.
Exactly.
But it's also a little bit like side note, but it actually like pisses me off in a way that people often I get not accused, but like, so are you a racist because you like Lovecraft? No. I do understand that he has a lot of like racist undertones, and well, not always even undertones
No,
in his
overtones as
stories,
well,
but the racism doesn't define him. It's just the one of shitty part that he had.
Yeah, I know, and I think that's a difficult part. Something that I had a difficult time also contending with, with the aspect of his racism or his inherent racism, and how you could divide, you know, him, his personal views with his writing, and sometimes you can't. It depends on what the way you look at literature, obviously. And then there's people that make excuses for him. It's just, you know, the times. Or that he got less racist when he got older. People tend to forget that he died very young, so he didn't get that much older. But if you read his letters, it is obvious that this racism is very strong. And especially the letters that he wrote between him and Robert E. Howard. Those are, I mean, very, very, at times, very vile in the way they depict other people. And he also, can't forget his homophobia.
Yeah. It was like something, because I stumbled upon the letters, like, after I read most of his stuff. And it, in a way, it was, like, disappointing.
Mm.
You know, like, okay, this is, like, the guy I've been, like, investing my time in. Because racism is something that is so far from my own worldview. So it was kind of like a bummer, but then I thought about that. I enjoy the parts that I enjoy, and I think I can differentiate this, that I enjoy the cosmic horror and leave the other stuff behind.
And I think, I mean, I had that discussion with Robert M. Price, who was a Lovecraft editor and scholar of some note as well, that he says that you shouldn't have to feel bad about it. I mean, it is what it is. Everybody has different views, and if we're going to go around judging people because they have a different view, they like vanilla more than they like chocolate, they don't like blue M&Ms or whatever, that shouldn't define or shouldn't stop you from enjoying the art that they produce.
Yeah, but it also a little bit depends on the final product that they produce.
Yes, absolutely. Depends, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have a hard time with Robert E. Howard's blatant, you know, misogyny in his books. Which I think in many ways is more complicated than Lovecraft's and racism.
Yeah. But Howard was not defending him, but he was a very sad man. As a person. I do love Conan. I do love Solomon Kane. And
Solomon Kane is awesome.
Yeah, I like Solomon Kane even more.
Yeah.
Because, like, it's this horror fantasy.
Yeah.
It's like, but yeah, he was, and his horror stories are, some of them are really good. But I've read his, was it like, not sure if it was biography, but he had a quite sad life as a person.
Is it the one, because I've been looking for it, actually. Now you just reminded me, I have to find it again. One Who Walked Alone?
I do not remember the name.
It was written by his, like, girlfriend at the time that he committed suicide. He had a fiance or a girlfriend. It was also made into a movie, like, last... What could it? I can't remember. It was with Renee Zellweger and... the guy who played in Daredevil, who played Kingpin. Can't remember what his name is.
Duncan. The huge black dude.
No. The one from the TV show.
Oh, TV show. Vincent D'Onofrio.
Yeah.
How do you say his name?
Yeah, Vincent D'Onofrio played Robert E. Howard in that movie.
Which is interesting, because Vincent is like 2 meters tall and he weighs 120 kilos of muscle, and Howard was this sad little fat man. So.
Yeah, it would have been really odd if it had been Michael Duncan Clark instead.
That would actually been funny.
Yeah.
Little bit like "fuck you" too.
Definitely.
It could have been that. Yeah, I was quite young. I was still in high school. I was like 17 or 18 when I read it. So, literally last millennia, I read it. So.
Yeah. It's one of my holy grails, actually, that book and The Haunted Castle, which was, I looked it up. It was written by Aino Railo.
Aino Railo?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is the author of The Haunted Castle. The Haunted Castle, A Study of the Weird, from 1927.
Ah, I actually have to, again, ashamed to acknowledge that I don't know that book. So I have to try to somehow get my hands to it.
Yes. I think they had a couple of copies on AB Books, which is like the like a collection. It's like Discogs, you know, the music service, but for books.
Yeah.
I think they might have had a copy. I'd have to take a look again. Let's bring it back a little bit. We've been talking about this and that and the other, and our time is actually winding down. But this has been very. I've gotten a lot of my questions answered about the climate in Finland when it comes to genre fiction. But what do you have coming out on the horizon? What should people be looking for?
This Hush Hush project involved in, and actually quite happy now, especially more happy after this conversation that we are both part of that. And I think 13 short stories at the moment in different publishing houses waiting for the judgment.
Okay.
So maybe some of them are coming out, hopefully. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm working on the first novella at the moment. Last night hit the 13K mark, so that's coming along. And then I'm outlining my novel. Well, everybody is. I know that. I have no illusions that just because I'm doing these things, they're going to be big. So in reality, there's going to be probably some short stories.
Yeah.
And that's something I'm going to keep doing because I love writing them. And I see short stories as... I see many times people in writers group that I'm starting to write my first novel. Where should I start? Mm. And I think my answer is always short stories. You can't like pole vault before you know how to run, and you can't run before you know how to walk.
No, exactly.
So I'm trying to get my craft down, my individual voice down with the short stories and drabbles, and then move on like longer, bigger pictures, bigger constructs. And
yeah,
but short stories, they're probably coming out, some of them.
Yeah.
At least two are now coming from these Scary Snippets 2 collections, family collections, and campfire collections
at
some point during this year.
Well, the family edition, I think, is already out, right? Because I'm in that one, in the one that's called Scary Snippets, just family. And then there's one called Siblings.
Yeah, I'm in the family too. I have the family recipe.
Yeah, they're actually out.
Oh, it's out. Okay.
Yeah.
Again, I'm very ashamed. because when you get the writer's copies, I kind of forget that they're coming out actually sometimes.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of OCD in that way. I have to have my name on them through the Amazon author page so that people can see it. You know, so I always keep an eye on when they're released so I can like jump in there and put my name.
Yeah, I'm complete opposite, and like my wife, she's a marketing director.
Yeah.
And she's always like, come on, dude. Like, you write stuff and some people even like it. And even when you contacted me, I was like, I'm not going to do that. Come on, podcast. And then, like, she extorted me using her amazing food skills.
Ah.
Have to do it. No, I'm joking. But, like, I in a sense, I don't care. But, of course, I care a lot. But I'm just really bad at... like keeping up with stuff and like telling people I'm in this and I'm in that, and like it baffles me. People always on Facebook in these different groups, they like, I just submitted to this and that. Like who cares? Why do you announce that? I mean, of course it's their style, but it's so far from myself.
I think it's the one thing that annoys me a little bit. And people can announce it as they wish, but when people announce that they get rejected. And then just feel like they want people's sympathy for it somehow.
Yeah.
I get rejected all the time too. So.
Yeah. I got 68 rejections before my first acceptance.
Yeah. See? If you're going to feel bad about that all the time, then, I mean, what's the point?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like, and I was like, and then one thing is also people are like, I just got my first one-star review on Amazon. What do I do? And it's like, and I understand it feels bad, but kind of like, if you think whatever your art is, music, sculpture, painting, writing, if you think that every single person in the world is going to love that, I think you shouldn't do that then.
No.
Like if you can't, because then I always think like, do I love everything I see? No. Do I love everything I write? No. I don't care if somebody calls my stories shit. because it's their opinion, and I can appreciate that because I think something is crap also, like in a exchange.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, if people do want to connect with you on social media or find you on social media, where do they go? What do they look for?
I think the Facebook page is there. I'm like mostly active. It's always open. I might not be the most like talkative person there, but if people want to connect and see me and talk to me, I'm happy to talk with people. People are nice, even though I'm Finnish, and sometimes we are accused of misanthropy and just being gloomy. Well, but it's not all Kossu and knifing people in the family reunions here. We're also sometimes quite nice. Facebook and Twitter, they are. If people tweet to me, I will respond always.
Yeah,
and I haven't had a lot of those, but like I do.
No.
And Facebook probably is the best place.
Yeah. And I mean, I can attest to that. Finnish people are nice. I mean, I work with some, and they're great. So they're not as melancholy as you would think. I mean, Swedes are mostly ignored. I mean, that's the bane of Swedes. People don't really care about Swedes. And I think that's the difference.
Half of my family lives in Sweden, is Swedish. The other half, like my cousins and my aunts, and they're all Swedish. They live in Stockholm and Bro and place like that. But for some reason, I don't speak Swedish basically at all. There's this thing in Finnish school that you have to learn Swedish.
Aren't you supposed to take the Swedish language test?
Yeah, we're mandatory. But it's never that I disliked it. I've always loved languages. And English just stuck to my head. I don't know why. It just stuck to my head. And I sincerely tried Swedish in school and with my family. But I don't know why. It's just, it's weird. It's maybe it's like on a genetic level, I guess, like Finnish people should ignore Swedes also, like, but as a joke, but like, I don't know, it's weird.
Yeah, well.
Like, and I always joke about Swedes, and it took my wife a really long time to realize that I'm just joking.
It's okay. They can take it. I'm sure.
Yeah. I'm sure they can. Yeah. I know a lot of very nice Swedish. Actually, I know zero unpleasant Swedish people.
That's nice to hear.
Yeah.
Well, Thomas, it has been an absolute joy, even though we had some technical issues to begin with.
Yeah, dental issues and timetable issues.
Yeah,
it
happens, you know.
Yeah.
Life comes between. I don't think I have yet, I think, to have a scheduled podcast that hasn't been moved one way or another.
But yeah, it was really nice talking to you. And like I said, now that we're going to be working together, it's even nicer that we met face to face.
Absolutely. I think that does a lot. I mean, I think people that I've worked with, collaborated with before, I think it's been even better collaboration after I've talked to them, like Tim Mendes and David Green, for instance, are just two of them that they've formed really good relationships with afterwards.
Yeah. Personally, I haven't talked to them, but in Facebook I have, and they're really nice guys.
Yeah.
They seem like... At first, I was a little like pissed that I come after the Swede in this story that we're coming, but now I'm okay with it.
Well, you can
think... I gracefully give you the first place in that.
Thank you. Well, I did. I must say that I... Because when I was asked and I saw like the first draft, because I saw it early on. I mean, a lot of the people that we work with are in America, and they were probably sleeping.
Yeah.
So when I saw the document, I just jumped into it right away because I knew exactly what I wanted to do.
I can't go into this, but there's a little similar story that I have been forming myself.
Mm-hmm.
Different, but the same setting. And when Tim messaged me, I was like, I told him that the story, and he was like, okay, great minds think alike. And then he sent me the invitation.
So that'll be cool. It'll be a cool project, and
it will be.
Yeah, and
hopefully one of many.
Yes, and we will probably talk even more now that we know each other.
Hopefully,
Yes.
hopefully.
Well, you have a very great rest of the day.
You too.
And
I'm gonna go eat
yes, do that.
here.
I will go. I think I'm gonna go cook soon.
Lovely. So
Yes.
same.
Yeah.
Great stomachs think alike,
And
so.
probably very much so. Well, thank you. It's been a delight. Thank you for coming on.
Absolutely. See you soon and talk to you soon.
Yes.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Welcome back. That was a great chat. Thomas Wake has a lot of stories to tell, and he has he definitely knows what he's talking about, and it's nice to hear somebody who has a lot of thoughts and ideas about the mythology of where he himself comes from. And I think at a different date, and if we'd had more time, I would like to talk about maybe like difficulties if you're not connected to a world that is so mythological or fantasy laden from the beginning, if it's difficult to tap into that, if you're in a country where that doesn't really exist. But that's for a different date. I would like to thank Thomas Wake for coming on the show. I'd like to thank John Holtman for providing the music. I would like to thank you listeners for tuning in. Please, if you like it, give us a rating on the podcast apps that you use. Tweet it out, Facebook it out, and follow us on Instagram. Whatever you do, just pass on the good word. Thank you very much for the chat. Don't forget to check out our podcast, Storytellers, The Guild of Storytellers, and Easing the Reader for even more content from The Guild. Thank you very much, and talk to you next week.